Marco on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome, this is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. Wow, it's getting summer. So yesterday was the longest day of the year. That means we are in the middle of our hot season. So that sun or the earth is tilted so as to catch the maximum amount of radiation from the sun. So warming up, nice days, no more hopefully bad weather from the winter. So what's happening in the world of astronomy? Well, it's a lot. Keep hearing things like the observable universe. Well, that means some astronomers think that there is a universe out there that extends till infinity. So it's a infinite universe, and the observable universe is only the stuff we can see, and that's pretty far, 10, 12 billion light years. So that's a big place. What's happening in astronomy? Well, August 21st, there's going to be a total solar eclipse with live coverage from NASA. So I'm going to read an article dated June 21st, which is yesterday, and it says NASA prepares for August 21 total solar eclipse with live coverage, safety information. And there's an image here. The image of the moon crossing in front of the sun was captured on January 30th, 2014, by NASA's Solar Dynamic Observatory, observing an eclipse from its vantage point in space. So I was in Shanghai in 2009 or 2010, and we were waiting for an eclipse. It was about 9 in the morning or 8 in the morning. We're all sitting there, but it was so cloudy we couldn't see. And all of a sudden, it's 9 in the morning, the sky got very dark for a little while. And then, so we missed that. But anyway, this is coming now, and it should be viewable from all North America. So I'm going to read the article now. For the first time in 99 years, a total solar eclipse will occur across the entire continental United States. So I assume that means Canada as well. And NASA is preparing to share this experience of a lifetime on August 21st. Viewers from around the world will be provided a wealth of images captured before, during, and after the eclipse by 11 spacecraft. That's 11. That's a lot. At least 3 NASA aircraft, more than 50 high-altitude balloons, and the astronauts aboard the International Space Station, each offering a unique vantage point for the celestial event. Now, that should be spectacular from the International Space Station. There's no atmosphere blocking it out, so they'll be able to see something wonderful. NASA television will air a multi-hour show, Eclipse Across America, through the eyes of NASA, with unprecedented live video of the celestial event, along with coverage of activities in parks, libraries, stadiums, festivals, museums across the nation, and on social media. So I'm just going to take a side comment here, get away from the article for a sec. I think our moon is the only moon in the solar system that, when it transits in front of the sun, our star, it completely covers it. So that's the only one in our entire solar system. So isn't that coincidental? We have life on Earth and we have a moon that perfectly covers the exact same size of the sun as it is from its vantage points in space. Quite coincidental, or is it not? Anyway, back to the article. Coast to coast, from Oregon to South Carolina, 14 states will, over a span of almost 2 hours, experience more than 2 minutes of darkness in the middle of the day. When the moon completely blocks the sun, day will turn into night. So that is, what time is that? Didn't say. Okay, in the middle of the day. When the moon completely blocks the sun, day will turn into night and make visible the otherwise hidden solar corona, the sun's atmosphere. Bright stars and planets also will become visible. That'll be neat. Using specialized solar viewing glasses or other equipment, all of North America will be able to view at least a partial eclipse lasting 2 to 4 hours. So says Thomas Zurbuchen, an associate administrator of NASA Science Mission Director in Washington, D.C., and quote, "Never before will a celestial event be viewed by so many and explored from so many vantage points, from space, from the air, and from the ground. With our fellow agencies and a host of scientific organizations, NASA will continue to amplify one key message. Take time to experience the August 21st eclipse, but experience it safely. Yes, viewing safety. Here it goes. The only safe way to look directly at the uneclipsed or partially eclipsed sun is through special purpose solar filters, such as eclipse glasses or handheld solar viewers. Homemade filters or ordinary sunglasses, even very dark ones, are not safe for looking at the sun. In the 70-mile-wide swath of the country that will experience a total eclipse, it's safe to look at the total eclipse with our naked eyes only during the brief period of totality, which will last about 2 minutes, depending on your location. So if I'm not somewhere else, maybe I'll go to Oregon to make sure I see it. An alternative method for safe viewing of the partially eclipsed sun is with a pinhole projector. With this method, sunlight streams through a small hole, such as a pencil hole in a piece of paper, or even the space between your fingers, onto a makeshift screen, such as a piece of paper or the ground. It's important to watch the screen, not the sun. For more information on view and safety, visit https://eclipse2017.nasa.gov/safety. NASA and other agencies will provide vital information and updates on their respective websites that include viewing safety, activities across the country, including at national parks, in addition to transportation preparations. Now, let's look at our sun. There's a paragraph here titled Studying Our Sun. Here goes. Many researchers and citizen scientists will take advantage of this unique opportunity to study our sun, solar system, and Earth under rare circumstances. The sudden blocking of the sun during an eclipse reduces the light and changes the temperature on the ground, creating conditions that can affect local view weather and animal behavior. Yeah, animals act funny maybe during an eclipse. Understanding the sun has always been a top priority for space scientists. These scientists study how the sun affects space and the space environment of planets, a field known as heliophysics. As a source of light and heat for life on Earth, scientists want to understand how our sun works, why it changes, and how these changes influence life on Earth. The sun's constant stream of solar material and radiation can impact spacecraft, communication, and orbiting astronauts. So let's take an aside here. What people usually do is we can see our sun, but that's just a small percentage, maybe 1% of the total sun. Beyond that, we can't see it. That's why solar neutrinos, little particles that are made in the core of the sun, when the core undergoes nuclear fusion, when the hydrogen, the neutrinos escape instantly and arrive on Earth 8 minutes later. So we can study those to get properties of the sun. So if you're going to watch the solar eclipse on August 21st, do it safely. Okay, now I'm going to go to something else, and it's going to be about astrophysics, and it's about Hubble captures massive dead galaxy that challenges theories of galaxy evolution. So this is from another website called technology.org. NASA has a similar article, but I thought, why not go with a technology.org article for a change? Okay, so it's a dead disk galaxy. And what is a dead disk galaxy? Okay, there is a photo here with a caption, and the caption reads, acting as a natural telescope in space, the gravity of the extremely massive foreground galaxy cluster MACS, so MAX, J2129-0741, magnifies, brightens, and distorts the far background galaxy MACS 2129-1, shown in the top box. The middle box is a blown-up view of the gravitational lens galaxy. In the bottom box is a reconstructed image based on modeling that shows what the galaxy would look like if the galaxy cluster were not present. The galaxy appears red because it's so distant that its light is shifted into the red part of the spectrum. So what happens in objects that are moving away from us? Just like let's take an example here on Earth. We have an ambulance moving towards us. As it moves towards us, its siren, the wavelengths are shortened because it's moving towards us. So as it emits sound, the next second it emits it from a closer distance, so the galaxy or the wavelengths of the sound are crunched together. When the ambulance just goes right past us, it's normal because we're right at the same distance of the ambulance. But as it speeds away, every second it emits another pulse that is emitted a second further in or the distance that the ambulance would take to travel 1 second. So the wavelengths are longer. So that's the same kind of analogy. Here it is a galaxy moving away from us. So the red, wavelengths, as it moves away, the wavelength of the light is lengthened, just like when the ambulance moves away from us. So they call that a redshift. From measuring this redshift, scientists can determine how far this galaxy is. Okay, I'm going to read the article, and hopefully we'll start making sense of everything here. So this is about gravitational lensing. When an when light passes by an object, and a very, very, very massive object, and what this, the mass of this very massive object, it magnifies the image behind it, and it also could do a magnify the number of images. So you're looking at one image, four images, where it's really just one image. So it could make four images on either side, top, bottom, left and right of the thing. So what you're looking at four pictures, but it's actually the same thing that's been magnified and that has made into multiple images. So I'm going to read the article. By combining the power of a natural lens in space with the capability of NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, astronomers made a surprising discovery. The first example of a compact yet massive, fast-spinning, disc-shaped galaxy that stopped making stars only a few billion years after the Big Bang. So this is a galaxy. If it stops making stars, I guess they call that dead. Finding such a galaxy early in the history of the universe challenges the current understanding of how massive galaxies form and evolve, say researchers. So I'm going to go to the side a bit. I remember years ago I was reading something. Well, what came first, black holes or stars? Because what happens is in the center of most galaxies is a black hole that powers the galaxy. Now, these are not stellar mass black holes. They're super black holes, millions or billions of times the mass of the sun. So there's all these theory that are models that astronauts are trying to construct. And in their assumptions, they say, well, what happened first? Did the black hole happen first or did the star happen first? And in this one, they have certain assumptions they build into their model of galaxies. So this apparently is challenging these models that they made. So let's read on. How is it challenging? How is this new discovery challenging their models? Okay, I'm going to read on now. Read on, Marco. When Hubble photographed the galaxy, astronomers expected to see a chaotic ball of stars formed through galaxies merging together. Instead, they saw evidence that the stars were born in a pancake-shaped disk. This is the first direct observational evidence that at least some of the earliest so-called dead galaxies, where star formation stopped, somehow evolved from a Milky Way-shaped disk into the giant elliptic galaxies we see today. So that's the same. There's all different types of galaxies, and scientists have models on how they form. So apparently this is challenging those models. You know what? I'm going to go for a break, and when I come back, we'll talk more about galaxies. And hopefully I can get someone on from, I'm planning to get something from the Cassini team, because they are in their final stages of diving in between Saturn and the rings of Saturn. And it's going to burn up, the Cassini spacecraft will burn up in the atmosphere of Saturn after 13 or 14 years of wonderful science. So hopefully I can get somebody on that can help us learn more about this stuff. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I sh**.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electro-pop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow across it and we're making it like young. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're...
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Say, baby. Don't get in no trouble.
No, we're just trying to win this dance.
You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astrotop.
We got the Refugees All-Stars, Robert Devin in the club, Y Clef Jean.
Look at here, look at shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her. Buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another one half hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. Get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me, I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My crew slang flow worldwide like a current. Whip to every spot where nobody got insurance. Brother, do the math. You ain't half niggas at it. My man's claim true. You forget about it. Ho-ho, just a new stance like my influence.
Welcome back. This is Marco on Astro Talk. I was just straying a bit, and I was looking at something called X-rays in the sky. So researchers at University of California, Santa Barbara, have given the first demonstration of three-dimensional imaging of objects through walls using ordinary X-ray wireless signals. So they can send these signals through the wall and see through walls. Isn't that cool? So we'll keep an eye on that and see what that turns into. Okay, back to the article. It's about this dead galaxy. I'm going to go back one paragraph so we can get reacquainted with the article, and then I'll go on to the next paragraph. So the old paragraph I just read, I'll read it again. This is the first direct observational evidence that at least some of the earliest so-called dead galaxies where star formation stopped somehow evolved from a Milky Way-shaped disk into giant elliptical galaxies we see today. This is a surprise because elliptical galaxies contain older stars, while spiral galaxies typically contain younger blue stars. So I think we're a spiral galaxy. At least some of these early dead disk galaxies must have gone through major makeovers. They not only changed their structure, but also motions of their stars to make a shape of an elliptical galaxy. So says study leader Soon Toft of the Dark Cosmology Center at the Niels Bohr Institute in Copenhagen, and quote, "This new insight may force us to rethink the whole cosmological context of how galaxies burn out early on and evolve into local elliptical-shaped galaxies. Perhaps we have been blind to the fact that early dead galaxies could in fact be disks simply because we haven't been able to resolve them or see them." That's a good way to see resolve. So how can we, so we can see how difficult it is to try to piece something together, because something like this, it could take shape or scale on billions of years. And during our short lifetimes, and when Galileo first peered into heavens with his telescope about 400 or 500 years ago, we have not been studying things for that long. And most of our major observatories have only come into the sky, like Hubble, in the past 25, 30 years, some 5, some 10. So we haven't studied them in the distance or the time scales that these things usually take to evolve over. So a galaxy may take billions of years to evolve, and we obviously don't have billions of years to look at it. So scientists have to piece together models. And imagine if we were using, or the astronomers were using, technology that Galileo had. Now we have technology with the Hubble Space Telescope, and the theories have developed. So new theories, new space observatories, we can see things and make newer models that challenge the older models. So back to the article. Previous studies of distant dead galaxies have assumed that their structure is similar to the local elliptical galaxies they will evolve into. Confirming this assumption in principle requires more powerful space telescopes than are currently available. However, through the phenomenon known as gravitational lensing, a massive foreground cluster of galaxies acts as a natural zoom lens in space by magnifying and stretching images of far more distant background galaxies. By joining this natural lens with the resolving power of Hubble, scientists were able to see into the center of the dead galaxy. The remote galaxy is three times as massive as the Milky Way, but only half the size. Rotational velocity measurements made with a European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope, or VLT, showed that the disk galaxy is spinning more than twice as fast as the Milky Way. Still amazing, though, something this far away, billions of light years away, scientists are able to resolve it and make measurements such as they can measure how fast it's spinning, how massive it is. It's much more massive than the Milky Way. It's spinning twice as fast as the Milky Way, but it's smaller than the Milky Way. Back to the article. Using archival data from the Cluster Lensing and Supernova Survey with Hubble, that's called CLASH, so C-L-A-S-H. I'll say it again. CLASH stands for Cluster Lensing and Supernova Survey with Hubble. Toft, this professor, his name is Soon Toft. Soon Toft and his team were able to determine the stellar mass, star formation rate, and the ages of the stars. Quite amazing. Why this galaxy stopped forming stars is still unknown. It may be a result of an active galactic nuclei where energy is gushing from a supernova or from a supermassive black hole. This energy inhibits star formation by heating the gas or expelling it from the galaxy. Or it may be the result of the cold gas streaming onto the galaxy being rapidly compressed and heated up, preventing it from cooling down into star-forming clouds in the galaxy center. So remember this, to form stars, the gas and the cloud must be cool, not hot. So I still think it's amazing we have these giant black holes. Why haven't they swallowed up the whole universe? I've thought of that sometimes. Back to the article. But how do these young, massive, compact disks evolve into the elliptical galaxies we see in the present-day universe? Probably through mergers, Toft said. If these galaxies grow through merging with minor companions, and these minor companions come in large numbers and from all sorts of different angles onto the galaxy, this would eventually randomize the orbits of the stars in the galaxies. You could also imagine major mergers. This would definitely also destroy the ordered motion of the stars. So again, they're making models of an incredibly complex thing that's happening. And these things happen over billions of years, and they've happened billions of years ago. So to make all these great models and assumptions, wow, it's quite amazing because I could never make them up. Why this galaxy start forming is still unknown. I just read that. But how do these young, massive, compact disks evolve into elliptical galaxies we see in the universe? Probably through mergers. I also read that. These findings are published in the June 22nd issue of the journal Nature. Toft and his team hope to use NASA's upcoming James Webb Telescope to look for a larger sample of such galaxies. So yes, the James Webb Telescope, which should have been in orbit already, but they're messing around with it. It's still behind schedule. And there's one called the WFIRST. That's going to be the next one. So we have Hubble up there. It's going to be joined by the James Webb Telescope. And in maybe 10 years from now, WFIRST. But we have so many other telescopes and observatories in space that aid us looking through this. So excuse me. Okay, now I'm going to skim through. We're almost finished, so I'm going to go through the NASA article, the same article. Let's see. the findings are published in the June 22nd issue of the journal Nature. Toft and his team hope to use NASA's upcoming James Webb Telescope to look for larger samples of such galaxies. So anyway, we're going to end on that. And there's actually one more picture. So there's one more image from the article. It says, this artist's obsession shows what the young dead disk galaxy MACS Max 2129-1, right, would look like when compared with the Milky Way. It's about half the size, even smaller. Oh, although three times as massive as the Milky Way, it is only half the size. Max 2129-1 is also spinning more than twice as fast as the Milky Way. Note that the regions of Milky Way are blue from bursts of star formation, while the young dead galaxy is yellow, signifying an older star population and no new star birth. So that's pretty cool. So here we have a distant galaxy. Let's see. Did I mention how far away it is? I will try. It was a galaxy that stopped making stars only a few billion years after the Big Bang. So they didn't tell us how old this galaxy is. So anyway, I have to sign off. I'm going to be coughing like mad. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk. And as I told you, my website's online, www.marcosastrotalk.com. That's www.marcosastrotalk.com. I have about 25 podcasts there. I'll start loading more. And my partner, DP Lally, she's going to have a page on the accessibility community. So look forward to seeing her podcast as well. So thank you for listening. You've been listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.